The Wiggly Podcast. The Archers, but real. Welcome to the Wiggly Podcast. I'm Heather from Wiggly Wigglers and I'm joining you today from the Wiggly office, which is in full Christmas order flow, with Nicole, Gareth taking orders like Billy-O, hopefully sorting out trees. The trees are going out this week. You'll know that we can't send our bare root trees or our hedging plants out until it's cold enough and the sap has gone from the trees. And this week is the week we start to send all those out. So the edible hedging packs and the bare root plants are going out, ready to plant wherever you are. I've got an interview this week with Ricardo. Ricardo has brought in his hazel bean sticks and also his willows to make wigglers out of. So here we go, over at the warehouse, where I catch him to have a quick chat about willow and hedging, which turns into a long talk about hedging. Here we go. Well, and the thing is, I'm over at the warehouse, and who's turned up but Ricardo?
I heard a little voice poking up from behind the beehive composters. I couldn't see anybody, and then suddenly a little head popped out.
I just crashed the van into the shed.
I don't believe that you.
I was gently going backwards.
I don't really let you out, really.
There's not much scenery today, so you can't see much.
Yeah,
so I was gently going back, and there was a bit of a bump, and then they all came running, and I thought, oh, they're over exaggerating. Aren't they? But anyway, I did actually crash. Not to worry.
No. Well, it's you, isn't it? That's pretty expected.
We've had the SAS in the yard this morning on operation. So
yeah, they do share a facility, don't they, next to the Wiggly warehouse.
Yes, but they've been at the farm. They've been actually operating on each other. And apparently the head guy, the captain, gets beaten up this morning because they've had 4 days in the woods.
Right.
Out there without a tent or anything at all.
Right.
And they get their own back this morning, so we've seen them all running around the yard shouting.
Yeah.
And they've got guns.
Right.
It's like cowboys and Indians.
Yeah, yeah.
And when Phil went shooting on Wednesday, one of the beaters fell over one up in the wood.
Hello, yes. There was one ensconced in the wood, yeah.
And he said, I'm on operations. Frightened the beater to death.
Just looked up at him and said, yeah, I'm on operations. This is it. I've got an M16. You've got a stick.
Exactly.
Keep walking.
Yeah. So he did keep walking. Put him about a bit.
Well, it is funny. I mean, that's kind of weird. I remember bumping into a mate, because, you know people in the regiment, don't you, living in Hereford?
Yeah. They're those idiots with shorts on, with rucksacks, with bricks in them, running about at 5 o'clock in the morning.
They do that as well. They do it. But a mate of mine said, I bumped into the supermarket, and he said, I'm working, Rich. I said, are you? He said, yeah, Rich, I'm working. And that suddenly occurred to me that he wasn't doing some kind of training thing, in Tesco's. I said, oh, okay, all right, I'll go then. I'll see you later.
I can still see the confusion on your face now.
I was puzzled by it. Not the warmest response I've ever had from a chum.
Come on, let's have a look at what you've brought.
Yeah, no, here we go. Some cheeky willow and hazel, which it would seem that the hazel's been something of a success, really. Hazel bean sticks. Well, it was an idea that we had earlier on, wasn't it? Obviously they're quite popular in Hereford. I think, interestingly, in Herefordshire, we don't have the hazel coppice that the likes of counties like Kent do, for instance. But in certain areas, thriving, it's doing really well. And interesting, as you rightly said in your little description in the catalogue, coppicing is an integral part in wildlife rehabilitation, and it does open up glades for all sorts of butterflies and other sort of nighttime Lepidoptera and bees and the like, and for kind of probing inland wading birds like woodcock. I mean, they love the spaces provided by coppicing. And of course you get this new vibrant growth, and so far as a kind of climate change perspective is concerned, then, you know, sequestration of CO2 is far more significant in areas where there's new growth than old, mature, slow growing vegetation.
Because people are always concerned about chopping down trees, and you're chopping down trees,
really.
Aren't you?
It's important, it is, and these things grow faster. You know, trees often grow faster when they've been cut.
Like your hair.
I've got to get a haircut today because it's got a bit crazy.
Yes, I can see that.
I don't think anybody being as honest with me as you were.
No. Let me tell you, Rich. It's a mess.
Yeah. You did tell me once that you didn't fancy me when my hair was long.
That is so true. But did I say I fancied you when it was short? No, I didn't.
So I've brought me trailer load of willow and hazel in this morning. I mean, traditionally, hazel bean sticks. I mean, I suppose these are about 4 years old, this hazel.
Is that how long that's taken to grow?
About,
yeah, a lot taller than me, you know.
Yeah, about 4 years. Well, I suppose you get to about 12 foot or something like that in that time. And traditionally, a hazel bean stick is about 7'6". Which is sufficient because really you can't reach to harvest your beans any higher than that. But it would seem that a couple of, certainly one weekly customer has demanded a stick that's 9 foot long.
Oh!
So there's a couple of longer ones in
right.
here as well. Just
okay.
For those guys that want slightly longer sticks. Don't quite know how they're planning on reaching up that far, or whether they're kind of looking to drive the sticks far in the ground to stop them blowing over in a windy space. But nonetheless, there's some long ones there.
So,
and you see how I've distinguished them. The willow is, interestingly, last year I had one query from a Wiggly customer to say, or suggest that Wigglies might have confused willow with hazel. Because they'd stuck their willow in the ground, it wasn't growing. But it was early on in the season, so I said, no, it will grow, you know, just give it time. And obviously it grew. But this year, on the basis of that inquiry, I thought, right, to save any problems and any confusion between willow and hazel, I've tied in the little flexi-tie bits that the willow packs have with them. On the bundles.
Good thinking,
yeah,
Rich.
Just in case. I mean, there is a difference. I mean, obviously, the hazel is kind of browny, tawny coloured, and the willow is green.
Yep.
But
so that hazel, has that produced hazelnuts? Because I'm waiting for hazelnuts on my head.
Each of those stems probably won't have produced nuts at this stage. But having said that, within the little coppiced groups to each plant, some of the larger wood on those plants will have produced nuts. Yeah,
I see.
Nuts growing. I mean, either squirrels or the dormice or whatnot will have had them by now.
Yeah.
Certainly the squirrels.
And how long does it take roughly before you get hazelnuts on a hazel?
I'm not sure is the answer to that.
Thanks, Rich. Listen.
I don't know the answer to that, so there's no point in me pretending that I do.
But you usually pretend.
Yeah, I do, yeah, but I can't.
I'll find out, dear listener.
Yeah,
you know.
Find out. I'll be interested to know. Now you've asked me the question, I should find out.
For sure. Yeah, you'll be phoning me later.
I will.
Hey,
Michael can edit it in.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll do it again. Here we go.
I've got
Rich, how old is the hazel before it produces nuts?
6 years.
There we are. Where have you been harvesting this then? Have you taken up coppicing? Have you got a wood or how does it work?
It comes from a combination.
Or can't you say?
No, it comes from a combination. The willow comes from a friend's pond, which is dried up. Unfortunately, they used to have it as a carp fishery, and over the last few years, the water table's dropped. And the willow that was around the edge of the pond has now just kind of gone right the way across the pond. So in many respects, it's a fantastic little withy bed, and it's full of lovely little stems like this, which are perfect for purpose. And the hazel comes from a mixture of mixed woodland, really. Some of it's Forestry Commission, and some of it's been leased to a couple of friends of mine that go in and they coppice chestnut. And some of my school's work, I try to use coppice timber as much as possible. I do use a lot of chestnut because it has really, you know, real integrity. But it lasts as long as tantalised timber, if not longer. But aesthetically, it's much softer.
That's lovely looking, isn't it?
It's how it should be, Rich. It is how it should be, yeah.
And talking of which, how's Bugs and Beasties? Because I saw, this is Richard's business, I saw you in the Hereford Times.
I just saw that picture this morning. I was kind of, because before I came over here, I had to go in a working meeting with a colleague of mine, just in the office first thing, and so it's all kind of tied in quite nicely. Time and motion studies, I found, it's quite important, really.
Right.
I haven't quite nailed it, but as I was munching my peanut butter and toast this morning, I clocked a picture of me and some kiddiewinks. Now, see, that photograph was taken several months ago now, yeah, in the paper, with a treehouse that we built.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Yeah, it's cool, yeah. And it's got a green roof. That treehouse is elevated on chestnut stilts. right? So it's a fairly conventional shed, but I've had to kind of reinforce it and everything. And it's got a green roof. And the most amazing thing about that green roof is all I did is simply put topsoil on top of the roof and then covered it over with a bit of Herefordshire gravel, a bit of local gravel, pea gravel. And because that topsoil was so full of weed seeds, because it was kind of cheap, then
unusual for you to buy
cheap. Well, schools always have this, you know, these budgetary implications.
Yeah.
So it's always a question of trying to source materials, being imaginative in the way you kind of source things. But that topsoil has all has thrown up all sorts of different, what we would call weed seeds.
Yeah.
So the green roof has come about off the back of without having to plant anything in there. So I haven't kind of had to, you know, specifically source sedums and things like that. And it's fabulous, really. I mean, you know, it's not it's
another
not
plug
ideal,
for
it's,
a lack
it's
of
great,
sales.
It's great.
Again.
Well, I tell you an interesting thing. I mean, I know Wigglers do wildflower turf, which we've used before, which looks fabulous on a roof, and it's a better way of going about things because it's more aesthetically pleasing and it's quicker, and you're kind of guaranteed what you're going to get. So if I was in a position to buy that stuff, I would buy it. That's the reality. But you know, when money's tight, you've got to kind of make do with these things. I would be torn. I'm never quite sure whether to go with sedum or to go with wildflower turf. And I think actually most of my work tends to be a mix between the two, building off the basis of how I'm kind of feeling.
I can
at
see
the time.
Why both of them are popular, because although the wildflower turf looks fantastic at certain times of year, it can look a bit iffy at other times of year.
Seems tidier. It is a tidier. And really,
but it's not,
you know,
as good as it for wildlife. Or is it?
It's difficult to say, actually. I mean, ideally, if you've got a massive surface area, what would be nice is to have different themes, so you can have your sedum, then you can have a wildflower, and then you can have a kind of brown field site where you've got more gravel and dead wood, you know, sort of habitat that things can kind of ensconce themselves in. Even if it's, you know, elevated, things will get in amongst that, and that's quite nice to have those different themes if you can do it. So it adds this different dimension to a living roof, really.
Yeah.
But living rooms are so easy to build. That's just a piece of cake, really, to make. I don't know why we don't do them more often. I mean, there are certain implications with reinforcements and things like that, you know, but it's not... The affordability of the thing isn't detracted to that greater extent by the realities of, you know, having a green roof or just conventional tiling.
Right, Rich, we better get this stuff off. Well,
shall we?
You had.
Yeah. Indeed.
I've got to go to Ross Labels to restock.
Yeah.
We're just putting up our Christmas stuff.
I might pop down there later on.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
I might do, actually, because I've got to go to Ross.
Well, you'd be very welcome to help drill.
Do it. No, I'm not a drill. Just to, you know, point at things.
Thanks, Rich. I love your hazel.
Good.
And I love your willow.
Good.
Thanks, Ricardo. And Farmer Phil is ploughing again. Farmer Phil just ploughs these days, as far as I can see. But he did go shooting, and I managed to meet up with him and Ian Pryor, who is a potato farmer, quite controversial. Potato farmers are in Herefordshire because of soil erosion and also balance of wildlife and spuds. But here we are, I've grabbed him and got a quick interview with him about the way that he farms. Interesting, I thought. Okay, I'm joined tonight in the yew tree, I'm in our local pub, by Mr. Ian Pryor. Cheers, Ian.
Cheers.
And he is a potato farmer extraordinaire.
And wheat and rape and a sheep.
Really? So you're a mixed farmer, really?
Yeah, we grow more, not a wheat, not a wheat.
Give me the rough breakdown of your farm.
About 1,000 acres of wheat, 350 acres of wheat, oilseed wheat, so it's for crushing, for biofuel and stuff, or whatever.
Yep.
And then we about 750 acres of potatoes, and about 150 acres of beans, about 200 acres of sheep grazing.
So, and
diversification.
Go on.
Well, in terms of letting houses, and in terms of horses.
Liveries.
But not liveries, it's more of an eventing yard.
Yeah.
We don't do liveries.
Tell me how your farm works in as a mix. Does the sheep provide the manure for the potatoes? How does it work in rotation, or doesn't that?
Yeah, it used to be, but at the moment, the sheep are just grazing the areas we don't have an arable. We get the fertiliser and the muck from where the wheat goes. The wheat goes to the Sun Valley to feed the chickens, and the chicken shit comes back to that.
And so would it be fair of me to say that you're an intensive potato farmer?
No.
Why wouldn't that be fair?
Because we're conventional potato farmers. We're not intensive. Intensive would be close rotations, pushing land too hard, putting everything you could possibly put it. Yeah. Only irrigate some of it. It's 6-year rotation, long-term rotations with other crops. So our rotation is roots, cereals, brassicas, cereals, legumes.
Okay, and what does that give the soil? Because potatoes have been accused on many occasions of actually depleting the soil of substance, of washing it into the river, of causing more damage than good.
There's no truth in that whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because we grow potatoes in a proper rotation on land that's been growing other crops and potatoes for years.
And presumably Herefordshire soil can stand a little bit of it. It's of substance.
It's good deep soil.
Yeah.
It's got structure. It's been looked after. It's got a lot of organic matter. It's been farmed well over the years.
Yeah.
So by adding renewal stuff like that, it keeps it viable.
What does the brassica or the legumes do in the rotation?
Legumes, they have a different root structure. So they've got tap roots.
Yeah.
Legume is a tap root, goes straight down. And so we're very concerned about keeping the structure right.
Yeah.
You can't grow good copper boil seeds if you haven't got a good tap root.
Yeah.
It's got to go straight down the foot, straight down. So the difference with potatoes, they're shallow rooting crops. So we do, with the potatoes, every 6 years, we do have to plough quite deep.
Yeah.
But between potatoes, we don't plough at all. So it's non-plough. And we're trying to let the earth work itself. And so we lift it, if there's a compaction, but we don't invert it. So it's one pass, very low cost cultivations. Point is, we do have to plough potatoes. We're trying other systems, but generally you plough and then work it as minimum as possible.
So the sustainability of the soil is really important to your business. Is that fair?
It is the whole business. The soil is everything.
Now, I saw you in the paper looking like a ripe farmer stood in front of a massive tractor that seemed to be on tracks instead of wheels.
Yeah.
And you were telling me earlier
what
that means to your soil and your farm in terms of not putting lots of pressure on the tram lines. Can you explain that to my listener?
Yeah, it's not a tractor that's suitable for this area because our field size is too small. It's just a bit of fun, really. You know, in the east, on heavy soils, it's a very important machine.
Yeah.
It's not so important for us over here because we need tractors that are more adaptable to do different jobs. So we have big tractors, 350 horsepower tractors, but they can still pull trailers full of spuds in the off time.
So more flexibility.
More flexibility. Flexible.
To get in and out.
The word is flexible.
Yeah.
But the big quad track is an amazing machine, and it'd be good to try it out.
Oh, but you mean you haven't bought one?
Haven't bought one just yet, no.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you've got a lot of heavy land, heavy soil, big acreages, what we're farming in Herefordshire is equivalent to about 5,000-6,000 acres in Northampton or whatever else, and we'd definitely have one of those machines.
Really?
There'd be no question about it. Yeah. I'd buy one just like that because I know that I could develop the system behind it that would make it efficient.
What do you love best about farming in Herefordshire?
The whole business of being part of one community. The most important thing is people. That's what I love about it. And it never ceases to amaze me how my business can grow, another business can grow, by everybody being happy in terms of all helping each other. It's good land, it's a good area, good climate, but the most important thing to me is that everybody's making a living. And that is my dream of proper life as a farmer, is that everybody gets a fair share and everybody gets to use their resources. And we've got a wonderful system here still because of our topography, because of the way it's always happened, and we're just carrying on that tradition.
Now, if I was to say to you, you're quite a big farmer for this area in terms of land mass. So doesn't that statement that you've just said go against the small farmer. Is there a role for the person with under, I don't know, 200 acres?
Very much so, because you're always going to get different sized businesses depending on their business acumen or desire to farm or whatever. And yeah, absolutely. At the moment, I'm probably a bit too big. But there are benefits in that, in terms of surviving. Possibly you could have the situation where if you were to lose your core business from not being big enough, you could fail, which would let down all the people that you employed.
Yeah.
And so the great thing about some really dynamic businesses in the area is the fact that the people that are on the edge are supported by that. And that is the fantastic thing about it. And I love the idea of a business in the air doing well, so I always know that that will create business for somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's what people miss the point. They miss that trick. That is so important.
Great. Oh, there we are. Lastly, if you could possibly go and do an iTunes review, that would be utterly wonderful. You can go to iTunes and pop up a review of the Wiggly podcast. We've got a couple of weeks off, so it'll be 2 weeks before we're back with you. And we're just getting all our Christmas orders up and ready. So we would love to hear from you. Heather at wigglywigglers.co.uk. Farmer Phil is pwg at lowerblakemere.co.uk. And you can find us on Twitter at Wiggled and at Farmer Phil. Any comments, we'd love to hear from you. Bye from me.